Welcome to this very special podcast, number 520, the Wine Industry Network Trade Show and Conference 2022.
Grapevines.
Bottling lines.
Oak barrel alternatives.
Wine bottling.
Environmental consulting.
Wine labels.
Barrels.
Fun.
Well, we've all returned to the Wine Industry Network Trade Show and Conference after that little break we called COVID. This show gives our listeners a look at even more behind the curtain in the wine industry. The tools that aid winemakers to create top quality wines are simple yet complex, varied and common, and most of all, fun to check out. I interviewed seven exhibitors and one winemaker who happens to be an old dear friend to get a feel for what is needed in this modern time of winemaking.
Hey, good morning, Ray. This is Amy Aiken from Colopac Solutions.
Good to see you again, Amy. This is great to run into our old friend Amy Aiken, and here we are at Colopac Solutions, and we got some cool stuff here, really interesting devices, as our viewers will see in a moment. So tell me about what we're looking at that's over your shoulder to the left.
We're looking at Blue Morph Tank Sanitizing Solution, and it is a chemical-free, water-free tank sanitizing solution that you can have in the winery.
Blue. What does blue mean to me?
Blue morph, that's the area of the spectrum that the wavelength is at about 360 nanometers. And what that does is when it comes into contact with bacteria or fungi, it kills it. The whole idea is sanitized. So you clean the tank and then you put the light in, you turn it on, you sanitize it, and then you can put wine in it.
That's the best part. Then we get to drink the wine, don't we?
Absolutely.
Well, I think the one thing that's cool about this from what I've learned in a short period of time here is no chemicals.
No chemicals, no water, no pumps. Your operator puts the lamp in, turns it on, we program everything for you, and walks away so that operator can go do something else.
How long does that process take?
Depends on the size of the tank. You know, we shoot for 20 minutes to 25 minutes, but the larger tanks may take a little bit longer.
I mean, 20 minutes is nothing.
It's nothing. We have a number of product sizes.
You have one over here that's slightly smaller, and again, we'll show that in a cutaway. This is meant for strictly barrels, right?
Yeah, it's a barrel unit, and it sanitizes the surface of the barrel. The dose time for that is about 5 minutes.
I'm sure this is not an inexpensive product, but I think what I'm getting from this is time savings, chemical savings, and just something that's going to be incredibly efficient.
You know, the ROIs on these are within 3 years, typically. You're saving a lot of water, you're saving time, you're saving chemicals, you're saving energy because you're not running a pump, and your operator can do something else. Go do a punch down.
So what other devices do you sell here?
Well, we sell bottling lines, we sell presses, we sell pumps, we sell tanks.
I imagine there's multiple sizes, types of bottling lines, right?
Oh, absolutely. From 30 bottles a minute to 350 bottles a minute and more.
So correct me if I'm wrong, more and more wineries are getting their own bottling lines because it's simply more economical, isn't it?
Well, it can be. And part of the issue is in the last couple of years, we've had supply issues. So if they have their own bottling line, they can control their bottling time when they get the supplies. And a lot of people are investing in their own trucks, you know, bottling line trucks, and then they can take it from property to property or hire it out as a service.
And as we know, anybody's in business, you want to have control.
Right, absolutely.
And for our listeners who'd like to learn about you guys online, what's your website?
ColopacSolutions.com.
Amy, it's always great seeing you. Thank you for taking the time.
Ray, thanks for stopping by. Great to see you too.
Thank you. I'm here with Annie Steinle of Sun Ridge Nurseries. How are you doing, Annie?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for talking to us today. Tell me a little bit about, obviously you're a nursery. I figured that part out. But tell me about what you do. Our family, 40 plus years.
Yeah, so Sun Ridge Nursery is owned by Glenn and Terry Stoller. They've owned the and started the nursery 40 years ago, and they're still running it today. We make grapevines, so we custom graft orders and then grow them in our outdoor nursery and in our greenhouses before they're ready to be planted in your vineyards.
You know, this is where wine begins, and I'm sure you've probably heard that more than once. But I'm a little curious about selection and the different types of vines. I mean, how many different types of vines are you making?
Oh, an endless amount. There are a multitude of clonal selections and varieties. There's a multitude of different grapevine rootstocks that can be used based on your soil preferences and your climate. So there's an endless amount.
This is probably a very ignorant question. Roughly about how many a year do you sell?
Probably in the millions, yeah, at this point.
Where are you located?
We're in Bakersfield, California.
Do you know how the company actually began?
Yeah, so Glenn and Terry started it, and they were originally started with not just grapevines, but also trees as well. And then it just took off from there. They were delivering in the back of their station wagon, and it just grew.
So they're not doing others anymore? Are they strictly towards the wine business, or still broad?
Table grapes and wine grapes.
Cool, very good. For our listeners who'd like to learn about Sunridge Nurseries, what is your website?
Our website is sunridgenurseries.com.
Excellent. Annie, you did well. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm here with Gary Palmer of Interstave Oak Compliments. Gary, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Good to see you today. You know, what attracted me to the booth, other than your great smile, was this barrel and how unique it is. Tell me what you guys do.
So we source and manufacture oak barrel alternatives, which we like to call oak compliments, because they complement a lot of different ways, different aspects of the wine that people are making. We source from France, Missouri, anywhere in America that the oak trees grow. Then we season it at our yard in Sonoma, California, which has close proximity to the San Pablo Bay. So it creates a really nice sort of microclimate for the oak, because we have really cold mornings and evenings and then hot days. So the oak really develops a very unique flavor profile that's unique to us, because there's no other oak companies aging in Sonoma like we are. And then we mill it down into whatever format is what people are looking for. We do chips, flour, cubes, staves. Anything really, that anything but the barrel is basically what we do.
Did you say Missouri, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, right, you said Missouri. Now I'm curious, you France to Missouri, that's not something you hear every day when it comes to wood and oak.
Yeah, so that's typically where a lot of the American oak comes from. The Midwest is where we source from a lot of, probably most of the American oak that's used comes from that part of the country.
Very interesting. It's surprising to me. So this particular industry, you're worldwide.
Oh, yes. We have customers all over the world. We, at this point, we just sell French and American oak, but there are other oak species that people are using.
The demo I see of the barrel over here, what am I looking at over here?
That is a barrel interstave that we sell. It's a patent-pending product that we developed that you can take a neutral barrel, pop the top, and then add a unique flavor profile with oak staves into the insert that we put into the barrel.
Very cool. Kind of reminds me of a jet engine a bit.
It does have a very jet engine look to it, like a plane. Right.
Yeah, like the fins you see.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And then it just takes neutral barrels and allows you to get more use, second life out of them, which is good for a lot of reasons. Sustainability, economic sustainability, and producing a better product.
It's a great idea, and it's a very green thing. Very cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Most important for our viewers, Gary, if they want to learn about you online, what is your website?
Our website is www.interstave.com. We can also be found on Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, all at Interstave.
And you looked right at the camera, so you're a pro. You know what you're doing. He said it's his first time.
It's my first time, I promise.
Gary, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ray. Nice to meet you.
Sierra?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I got it right.
Nailed it.
I am here with Sierra Hurd, and Sierra is from Hurd Mobile Bottling. I stand here and read the sign like I know what I'm talking about. How are you doing, Sierra? Nice to meet you.
I'm doing great, thank you. Nice to meet you as well.
We just talked to a couple of people about bottling lines, and you're a mobile line. Many people don't realize that several wineries simply don't want to make the investment, so they will hire people like you to come and do their bottling. Explain to me how the process works.
So we have a 45-foot trailer. That trailer houses all of the equipment necessary to get wine from tank into bottle. We get that wine put in the bottle, we cork it, we screw cap it, we capsule it, we label it, and then it shoots out the other end, gets put back into those box cases, and off to the market it goes.
Is this done as trucks? Is this a semi? How does it work?
Yeah, so ours is a 45-foot trailer. We use a trucking company that helps move us around from spot to spot, so it's a pretty good-sized outfit.
I think the thing that's made me most curious about mobile bottling is you guys got to be booked quite a bit in advance, I would think.
Yes, we do book out pretty far in advance. That being said, we have a pretty flexible schedule, so we're always able to fit people in. Interestingly enough, you mentioned harvest. That is our slowest time of the year because all of the wineries are so focused on making the wine. So that's a great time for us to kind of go through our yearly maintenance. And then the rest of the year, probably December on through the following mid-September, is just kind of going for it.
Bottling can be spread over different periods of time.
Oh, it certainly can, yeah. You'll find that certain times of the year is when certain wines get bottled. So we see a lot of rosés and whites being bottled in the winter months, December, January, February. And then you start seeing all of those reds come through more in late spring and throughout the summer.
So I'm a little curious now. I imagine your truck can be out for a long period of time, kind of like on tour, for lack of a better way to put it.
Absolutely. Typically, our bottling line is always in motion, so we go from winery to winery to winery, rarely any off time in between. So we're kind of always in motion.
How many people on your end are working with the bottling as well as the winery?
So we have two amazing operators that run the equipment for us, Jose and Pedro. They're fantastic. So they do all of the hands-on with the equipment, running it, as well as all of the maintenance and the off time. And then the winery provides about 6 to 7 workers, along with the forklift operator. And that's more to just unpack the cases and repack the cases, palletize everything at the end.
And the whole process is super important because of cleanliness.
Oh yeah, we have a massive focus in quality control. We always want to make sure everything is clean. We sanitize everything every morning. We do quality checks throughout the day, checking the pressure, checking vacuum, making sure the label's all oriented correctly. So there's a lot that goes in on our end to make sure that package looks just right.
Well, most importantly for our listeners who want to learn a little bit about bottling, or maybe winemakers who don't know about you guys, what is your website?
Herdmobilebottling.com is where you will find us.
Well, I found you right here, so thanks very much for chatting, Sierra. Pleasure meeting you.
Wonderful to meet you, too. Thank you.
Thank you. I am here with Scott Sanders. Scott is with Condor Earth. Is that correct?
Condor Earth Technologies.
So tell me exactly about what you do, because when I walked by and chatted with you, we were talking about environment, so I'm a little curious and concerned.
So for the wine business, what we do is we help with the winery general order that's by the State Water Resources Control Board. They have this order which, if you discharge a certain amount of wastewater, you need to follow the requirements. We help you with all those compliance issues.
How would you go about something like that without getting too overly technical? I mean, it's like, it is simply an observation? Is it by the numbers? How does it go?
So they go with different tiers, tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. It goes from 0 to 100,000 gallons of wastewater that you're distributing. This could be in a pond, like we have a pond right there, or if you're using it for irrigation. Anytime you store a certain amount of water, you now have these new requirements where you might have to do a salt and nitrogen plan, and just the water board trying to prevent a lot of pollution that's been happening.
Now, this is probably a very broad question, but for an average winery, how much water? Do you know roughly what an average winery goes through?
Yeah, so around an acre is going to be 10,000 gallons, where you wouldn't really be regulated. But once you start getting over more than an acre of vineyards, your wastewater does start reaching those thresholds where you will need compliance requirements.
We already talked about it on this podcast today that it takes a lot of beer to make wine, but really it takes a ton of water to do this, and in a state that is really dry of water except for today.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we come in, because water is such a sacred resource right now. They need people like us, consultants, to help kind of protect it. So what you're going to want to do as a winery is ask yourself, how many gallons do I discharge? And if it is over 10,000, then you're going to have to start thinking that you're going to have to contact the water board. If you don't already have a waste discharge permit with them, this new winery order, you have until 2024 to get on board. And once that's on board, the water board can come out, ask you, do you have a waste discharge requirement plan going? And if you don't, you could get cited. So it's right now they're trying to get everyone involved that if you're discharging a certain amount of water, you're going to want to be part of this winery order.
Get that. That's a big deal. And I'm assuming that you're dealing primarily with larger wineries. Is that fair, or is it all different sizes?
All sorts of sizes. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're over an acre of vineyards, then you might be underneath this requirement. So it's anything over an acre that you would probably need to be part of the permit.
How long has Condor Earth been around?
So Condor's been around since the 80s. And we've been with the winery order just since 2018, because that's when it came about from the water board.
Amazing. So, these changes in our environment, the needs to be able to be more green, have created companies that are able to I don't want to say capitalize on it, but really guide people.
Oh, definitely. And that's what we're all here to protect the environment and make delicious wine, right? So we are for the winery. So it's make delicious wine. And if it's a positive externality, we protect the environment as well.
Well said. Very good. So most importantly for our listeners who want to learn a little bit about you, Scott, what is your website?
Our website is condorearth.com. And right there you can find all our capabilities and figure out which one you need.
Excellent. Scott, thanks very much for your time. Nice meeting you.
All right, thank you.
I'm here with Tony Austin, who just took off his name tag, but believe me, he is part of the show. Tony, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Glad to be here.
So what Tony does, as he said, is wine labels. He has an assortment of them here. Tell me a little bit about how you go about this. Tell me how you go about designing a wine label.
Well, designing wine labels starts with having a client that needs one and an interview process with them where we learn about them and what their needs are and what their backstory is. And in the end of the day, we're trying to design a label that tells their story and sells their wine.
So I'm looking at some that are extreme and fascinating. What I'm curious about is I see this label that's off to your left. It's fascinating. What brings a label to that particular life?
Well, in this case, this wine was an innovation for Rodney Strong, and we wanted to represent the entire life cycle of the grape from vine to bottle. And so we developed this very high-tech infographic that shows you the life cycle of the grape on its journey through being harvested into the winery, crushed, fermented, and all the way through bottling. And it's all represented there. And it takes a little work to follow the path, but that makes it interactive, and that's something that a good wine label should do, is draw people in and make them inquisitive about it.
Is this your company?
Yes.
How did you start in doing label design? I assume you have a graphics background, you're an artist?
Yeah, I have a degree in graphic design. I learned that in socialization at Chico State, and then I got my I did upper grad work at CCA, California College of the Arts. Worked in San Francisco as a young designer for a while, and eventually took a job in Napa Valley for a well-known wine label company. And I worked there as a senior design director for 6 years. And I learned what I needed to learn, and I always wanted to have my own studio. And so I started it in 1994. So it's 28 years now doing this. And I still love it. It's 28 years of managing projects, but the part I like the most is the designing and solving the problem. The management, not so much.
We're all that way, excuse me. Obviously, you've been doing this for a long time, and you've developed your own clientele. But some of these ideas, how much are they of you? How much are they of your client, percentage-wise, or is that varied broadly?
None of them are really mine, because every project's unique and it has its own solution. And if you look through our portfolio, you'll see that there's not a common thread of a look. And there might be a little bit in some things, but I like to think that's the attention to detail, mostly. A good designer shouldn't have a look, because every project has its own, a different solution, and
As I stand here, now I mentioned to the one that's off to your right, my left, off to your left, my right, is this lion, and what's really interesting about it is the look on its face, the color around its mouth, completely different. Is that a symbolism of some sort? What's the story behind it?
So the wine brand is called Juggernaut, which means unstoppable force. And this is a big, fruit-forward, juicy Cabernet, hillside Cabernet. And we probably did 70 different explorations on this before we settled where we are, just looking at different ways to express this unstoppable force. And it ended up being this, I guess you'd call it a graphic novel style illustration. We worked with an illustrator from Russia. This was before. And but he's great, and that's how it came about.
Yeah, it's impressive because it's very attention-getting. obviously what I'm looking at, I see some spirits. It looks like tequila, if I'm not mistaken. You also have some cans. So you're fairly broad in terms of what you do.
Specialize in adult beverage packaging and branding and a lot of other parts of it.
Most importantly for our listeners who'd like to learn about you, and really I'm very sincere in saying I love labels and I love the artwork I'm seeing here. What is your website?
It's austindesign.com, and Austin is spelled A-U-S-T-O-N, not I-N like the city.
Exactly. And are you from this area?
I'm from Northern California.
Cool. Yeah. Tony, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
It's great to meet you.
Great to meet you. You're fun to talk to.
Look me up.
I wouldn't use that. I'm here with Evan Farrell. You just checked his name tag, folks. He had to see that I was right. I'm here with Evan Farrell of Nidalier, and you guys have also bought Barrel Builders, is that correct?
Yeah, a few years ago. Yeah, they came under the Nidalier umbrella. Yes, sir.
We understand what barrels are, how important they are to wine. How many different types of barrels do you guys make?
Oh, I think we have about 12 in our selection right now, between French, American, Hungarian, and a few hybrids. Yeah.
Now we're talking about America. Where in America are you getting barrels?
You know, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Minnesota are the primary facilities for us there, primary locations.
Yeah. Now, when we talked to Barrel Builders in the past, part of what they were doing was also repurposing barrels. Do you still do that?
In a way, since the famous Phil Burton stepped aside, we kind of slowed down a little bit on that, but we still sell cooperage supplies, still do repairs in a way, but Phil was the backbone with a lot of that.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and it's sad that he's retired, but it's good that he's retired. It's good for him.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. We still see him around, and everybody asks about him, so he's not forgotten. He's still around.
One of the things we talk about is that wine is expensive, and what I try to get across to our listeners is that it's expensive because of what goes into it. Barrels are not inexpensive because of the work that goes into them.
Of course, yeah. No, barrels, it takes time to make them, you know, and price of wood, transportation, everything going up. It's not a cheap thing, but it's, you know, integral with a lot of what our customers do.
Absolutely. Obviously, you're involved in sales, but have you spent time kind of on the floor and, you know, when they're being fired, that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're in the cellars with our customers, tasting, changing, and listening to their needs to provide the best product. But yeah, we're in the cellar, on the ground with our customers for sure.
So really, everything you're doing is very customized to the winery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Depending on the region, the style, the winemaker, you know, it all comes into deciding what vessel to use. You know, it all matters.
What do you like best about what you do?
The industry, the people, you know, the wine. It's a fun place to be. You know, a lot of great people, a lot of good conversations, you know, over a glass of wine. So
that was a really good answer. Sounds like you've been doing this for a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, very long time. No, I'm newer myself, but I'm enjoying it so far, and, you know, plenty more people to meet and wine to drink. So
excellent. And, yes, we need to get to the wine later today. Most importantly, though, for our listeners, how would they learn about you online? What's your website?
Two ways to find us, Nidalier.com and BarrelBuilders.com. The two corporations can be found there. And then you'll have all the rep contact information through that.
Evan, this was great talking to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is fortunate walking around the wind floor at the conference. And who do I run into but our old friend, Marisa Taylor. Marisa, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ray?
Good. What I was kind of hoping to do during this series of interviewing people here is to run into a winemaker I know. And who do I run into is a person I have a great deal of respect for and I've known for a few years, so it's really fun to see you. So tell me about what you're doing these days.
Well, I've been helping out my friend Tim Milos, working with his clients, and just figuring out, having a great time. Harvest was really exciting, and was able to make Pinot, Chard, and Bordeaux varieties this year. So just having fun, making wine, doing what I love.
I love the fact that you get to do what you love. So at this event, you have all these different vendors with just about every kind of device, every kind of enclosure that you could imagine.
Yeah.
What are you looking for when you come here?
For me, it's about kind of getting my sense of the pulse of what's going on in the industry, and went to a couple of the talks that they had here. And then honestly, just kind of walking in, touching base, and just, you know, make those connections with folks. It's really great to be in person and to see folks, especially, you know, given what we've been through as an industry in the last few years.
So you just mentioned that you're making Chardonnay. Have you been a heavy Chardonnay maker in the past, or primarily Bordeaux wines, or...?
historically, I've made, probably would say, more Bordeaux varieties, but I do have experience with Burgundian varietals. So Chardonnay, I did at my last gig. We did make some Chardonnay as well, and sparkling and all that good stuff. So, yeah, it's just been fun to kind of get back to where I started.
I'll bet. So is there a grape that you would like to make, one you've not made yet at this point in your career?
Ooh, that's a fun one. Well, this year I did help with a Grenache, which was fun. So it was fun to kind of get into something I hadn't done. But honestly, I love all grapes. I don't discriminate. It's about the process for me. I love the hands-on nature and the people and just learning as much as I can. And it's just been wonderful to work with many different winemakers, and you just continue that journey of educating yourself.
That's awesome. Awfully good to see you.
Wonderful to see you.
I'm here with Heather Pollack, and Heather is with ACIC, which is a cork and enclosures company. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. As a wine drinker, corks fascinate me. It's a fascinating business. You have an assortment of them here. Tell me about your cork production.
So we represent a manufacturer that's been around for 153 years, family-owned business, a Portuguese company. And so everything that they do is cork. And so natural corks, you know, as we know, come from a tree. Trees can live 200 plus years, and the more we harvest them, the healthier and longer they live. And actually, when a cork tree is harvested, it takes up more CO2. So that's just a tidbit that a lot of people don't know. It's the tree that keeps giving. And so I love working for this company and selling corks, because not only do we like pulling them out of the bottle, but we're not selling plastic.
I think the whole thing about the greenness of it's important to understand, because there are people who say, well, the trees, they go away, but they don't go away. They continue to produce.
Sure, we're not taking the trees down. We are harvesting them every 9 years. And so as long as there is good weather, rain, you know, the environment has a lot to do with it. So we need to take care of our planet so we can keep pulling corks out of bottles, because without rain, we can't produce the cork that we need for wine.
So what's fascinating for me is, other than my love of corks, I really like the glass enclosures. Screw caps are very interesting, but you also have the ones that are, what are they called, that they're not cork?
They're microgranular, so they are cork. The only thing that makes them different is they're natural cork that are ground down to 1 to 2 millimeter pieces. And so that's part of our recipe. We're not grinding them down to a dust. And the corks that we have, we don't add plastic cells. Some of our competitors in the industry do add plastic. There's no need to add plastic. Cork has the ability to seal and has this compressibility that allows it to be a good seal. And so we're about 82% natural granulates with the binder that allows it to be put together and create the seal. And so these corks are great. They're great in the bottle, you know, that's going to be drank tomorrow. They don't provide all of the oxygen that a natural cork will after a long period of time, but they're good for everyday wines and wines that are up in the bottle for 3 to 5, 7 years maybe.
Now, years ago I learned about the glass enclosures, which I find fascinating, just because we always talk about screw caps not always being as sexy, but these just have a nice feel about them when you take them out. Tell me about glass enclosures.
So these are called Vino Seal. They're made in the Czech Republic, and the company's been around for a while. We represent them, and we have them in stock. They come in rosé, clear, and black, where you can just call and get a box from us. We can also customize them. So we can make them any color that you want. We can add your logo on the top. But there is, did you say that they're sexy? Is that what you said?
Well, I was comparing them to a screw cap, which kind of goes.
Right. No, they make them stand out on the shelf. So when someone sees a bottle with the Vino Seal on top, obviously it's not a cork. I think it draws people to the bottle. It'll make people pick up that bottle, try your wine, and, you know, come back for it again if the wine's good.
You've done this before.
Maybe.
Most importantly, for our listeners who want to learn about cork, understand about what you guys do online, what is your website?
We're acicclosures.com. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and the works.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Nice talking to you.
You can learn more by visiting wineindustryexpo.com or wineindustryadvisor.com.